Hey there, and welcome to Brave Business Triumphs, in partnership with Next, a growth acceleration agency. In our customer and control world, it's critical to understand that your business and your brand need to be more connected than ever before. Check out each episode with host Doug Longenecker and his special guests as they check in with growth-minded leaders and their organizations, exploring why and how they strive to make their businesses more personal and their brands more human. Learn from their inspiring stories of uphill battles, perseverance, and what it takes to make the necessary bold moves with confidence. Get ready, because here we go.
Hey there. Welcome to the next episode of Brave Business Triumphs. Today, we're speaking with Ash Ahmad in a no-holds-barred conversation about content, content strategy, content creation, and content distribution. Ash is a creative and data-driven social media content and digital marketer with over a decade of working with Fortune 500 brands. His expertise includes enterprise-wide marketing activation, content strategy, and social media growth. As the former co-founder of a social and content marketing consulting firm, Ash led the strategy and implementation efforts for brands like SAP, TD Ameritrade Institutional, Chevron, and Vanguard, increasing their reach and engagement while positioning them as thought leaders in their space. More recently, he was the VP, brand content, and global social media marketing lead at BNY Mellon. And today, he is freelancing with some exciting B2B and B2C brands, bringing his data-driven approach and creativity to help them achieve their goals. So Ash, welcome.
Hey.
Yeah, so glad you could join the podcast. I'm looking forward to learning more about today's state of content, especially in a time when it feels like more and more people are thinking that maybe there's just too much content out there. And yet, at the same time, conversely, marketers believe that maybe they don't have enough content out there, and they need to be producing more to kind of just feed the machine or feed the beast. Either way, it's definitely a pleasure to have you here to talk about all things content.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Doug. I'm super excited.
Yeah, so let's just kind of kick things off based on the whole notion about both sides of the coin around too much or too little content. I'd like to just get your reaction from two similar but kind of different mantras about digital content. And the first one is, content, almost like Marsha, kind of a whining, kind of complaining about content, whether it's too much or too little. And then the second one is content is king. And that's been around for a while. And looking at those two mantras, how would you assess both of these in today's digital environment or digital universe?
Oh, gosh. Okay. That's a great question. Yes. Content. I like that. Marsha. Context. So let me start with content is king. So the idea behind that was, obviously, content needs to be high quality. It needs to be engaging. It's the center of your marketing strategy, etc. I think that statement still holds true. That mantra still holds true. In the past few years, I would say that mantra has evolved. It went from, we're creating content, we're putting out a blog, an article, to we have a larger content strategy, and there needs to be context around it, right? So I don't want to throw out like jargon, but, content is king, context is queen, right? Like there's all of these. And what does that even mean, right? So I think for the way that we look at it, and the way that I look at it, and the way that I talk about it is that you need to know the context of where the content is being consumed and who's consuming it, right? So just to say, hey, Doug and I are going to do an interview. Great. What type of interview? How is this interview going to be published? How is it going to be distributed? Who's our target market, right? Like all of those things are so important. So while content is king still holds true, we've gone way beyond that.
I agree. When you think about just kind of it's kind of an unfair question we kind of started with here, but even just the idea or notion of content today has changed drastically. And there's so many different forms of content, whether it's social media posts or polls or surveys or video content. I mean, it really runs the gamut anymore, which makes the whole area just still very, very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting, and I would say also overwhelming, right? And I think that's where that content comes in, because we have been producing content for quite some time now, right? So we're not at the beginning stages of content creation by any means. So there's a lot of content out there. And I think we need to ask ourselves as brands, as marketers, do we need as much content, right? How do we potentially create less content and make a larger impact? Now, my dream one day is to walk in to a meeting and a CMO or head of digital says to me, how can we create less content? Like that has not happened yet, right? Yeah. Because everybody just wants more content because they just assume that more content equals further reach, equals further engagement, but that's not true at all, right? Like ultimately it comes back to that content is king context, which is I need to make high quality content, I need to contextualize it, and I need to really have a strategy that goes along with it instead of this kind of rotating door of content.
Really good point. And talking about contextualizing the content and how to make it meaningful, which is a really good way to help streamline maybe the content. So you're not putting, there isn't the need to put quite so much out there. And there's, I think I've had experiences with some of our clients and even what we do for Next in scaling back in some areas, some of our engagement rates actually go up.
You know, totally.
And it feels just a little bit, it's not what you would expect. And I was a little hesitant to actually kind of do that, but it was surprising how that actually worked.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think that also works around, you know, social is a really great example of that, right? Like you will read everywhere. If you look up how many times should I post or et cetera, you're going to get a full gamut, right? And the only way to really know is to test. So you testing that out with clients, I do that as well, of saying, hey, maybe we don't need 3 posts a day. Maybe let's edit that down. Maybe we take that one post and distribute it on another channel. So being really strategic is, and also, you know, even thinking about your team, because they also need time to create, they need time to create that strategy. So also taking into consideration time and bandwidth, right? Which this, you know, sometimes it seems so easy to say, let's do an interview, but we all know how much time, you know, it takes to create, to produce, to distribute all of that, right?
So, yeah. Well, in terms of those two mantras we kicked off with, is there one that you feel that's more, like a new one that would be more fitting for today's environment?
I'm gonna do a toss up between content is contextual and content is personal, because I think the way that we're moving forward with content is personalization is a huge one that we're hearing about. And what does that mean? It means different things, and I can get into that. But I would say content is personalized or it's personal would be a good one to add to the mix.
Yeah, most definitely. And I thought maybe it was just as easy as making contextual content is king.
Totally.
But yeah. I like where you're going with the whole personal aspect of it.
Totally.
Hey, just a quick program note. If anyone is interested in learning more about the topics we're talking about today, feel free to contact me at doug.l@whatsnext.com. And it's WHATSNKST.com. Sticking with the topic of content, Ash, let's consider like the development and distribution, which you touched on a little bit earlier, but the development and distribution of content within evolving technologies such as artificial intelligence.
Yep. You know,
and artificial came in the gate with enormous amounts of huge and great expectations. And only till recently has it really starting to live up to those expectations. Up until that point, it's been a little bit underwhelming, but we can start to see how quickly that's going to change and morph as new versions of like ChatGPT comes out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So things are changing quickly in that area. As well as with consumer adoption and usage rates, they're ticking up. What impact do you see this is having on how brands and businesses create content?
Oh, yeah, there's definitely, I mean, 2023 has been the year of AI so far, right? So, and you hear both sides of the stories. You hear the great parts of AI, and then you hear on the news, featured on the morning news, the horrors of AI, right? And with any new technology, that's so, of course, right? Like social media, think about, you know, the positives and the negatives, et cetera. So the way that, you know, AI is infusing itself into marketing and content now is really interesting because a lot of these apps that are currently exist, say Canva, for example, or any of these apps, they're integrating AI into their system. So now you can type in the type of image that you want and it gives it to you, right? So there's, it's already happening. So there's not, you know, it's more of that accessibility. It's more of that workflow. Now, when it comes to content production, I have some thoughts on that. Now, I don't think, as it stands now, actually ChatGPT-4 came out yesterday. I was at a live demo. And as it stands right now, we still need huge human oversight, right? So for example, I can input a blog into ChatGPT as a prompt and say, help me create an email template from this or 10 social media posts from this, right? It will do that. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't seen any that I will cut and paste and use. Right. Like they're just not it's just not there. Right. Mm-hmm. And as somebody as a brand that wants to differentiate and as a business that wants to differentiate, it's just not a great idea to do that. So does it sometimes give me great ideas? Yes. Will I pull something from there and create it? I think it's a really great idea generator. I think it's a good sometimes assistant where if I have a sentence and I'm like, wow, how can I maybe rewrite this in a different way? Sometimes I'll input it and sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not. I think taking it with a grain of salt and then figuring out how can I sort of integrate it into my process that makes it work for me. So that's kind of how I see businesses using it. And then I would say the other thing is that I think this is an opportunity, right? Because there will be so many people using it. There's going to be a lot of, excuse my words, like crap, fluffy, you know, sort of boilerplate content, right? So more than ever, that human kind of really fact-checking, rewriting these vague sentences, et cetera, is going to come in really handy. And the way that I see it, it's almost a shift of how you can even position your team where the writers can have a little bit more time to be strategic and be more editors than having to create everything from scratch. So I think it's more of how do you use it from a productivity standpoint versus it replacing your whole content, you know, plan and or creation. So it's still not there. I definitely huge opportunities, but I don't think anybody can at this point or should rely on it completely.
Yeah, I like your point about nothing's come up that you could just cut and paste and put it into real practical and actual usage. We've been exploring with it and dabbling in it some, and with some internal work as well as work for some of our clients. And it is interesting. You mentioned editing. We definitely have to go back and becoming more of an editor rather than an initial writer. But you still have to, some of the topics that we have are really specific. So we still have to feed it original content.
Right.
And then pull it back out. It just speeds the process up a little bit. But the original idea, like you said, needs to be there. And then to add that human or personal side of the equation in terms of writing, that's got to come still from a person at this point.
Totally. And it's also what you feed it, right? Because it's giving you back what you feed it. So if you have your keywords for SEO, if you have your brand voice and tone, if you have all those things, those are going to help, right? Is it going to get you to 100? No, but you are still inputting that intelligence. So however much intelligence you put in is what you're going to get back. So if I say, write me a blog about content strategy in 2023, it's going to do an okay job, right, of outlining it, etc. But it's just giving me what's out there already. And do I, as a brand, want to put something out there that's so boilerplate. And so what does it do for my brand, I guess,
right,
at the end of the day, right? Like, why would I do that? I might as well not create it, because A, Google's not going to rank it, because we're going to get to that point where it's going to recognize AI if it's not already. Mm-hmm. And B, your followers and your audience has seen it before. So it just doesn't really do great things for your brand. But from a productivity standpoint that you said, and sort of editing standpoint, I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, straight up, you're absolutely right. It's not going to have the contextualness enough
totally.
About it to make anything unique. And that's
totally.
that's really kind of the name of the game in terms of what we're doing with all of our clients from a marketing and brand standpoint.
Totally unique.
So we touched on like the impact. Yeah. So of like the inside baseball. So the with the agency side of things or the creation of it. But what do you think the impact might be on audiences or just the general public?
Mm. Ooh, okay. There's two sides, right? One is there's going to be more ease of use. So for example, that example I gave about Canva and sort of prompting to get outputs, I think is one. Mm-hmm. I think it's also personalization, I think, could be one as well, because we have all of these things like going beyond content creation. We have chatbots, right? Which if you're a busy business, you're able to create content around helping your audiences, et cetera. So I definitely see a lot of personalization. I see a lot of ease of access to information for audiences. But mm-hmm. obviously the flip side is, privacy, data usage, ethics, right? And I think mm-hmm. that's where it's going to come down to us, right? Like, it's going to come down to us as marketers and businesses to be as transparent as possible with our audience and tell them, hey, this is how we're using data. This is how we're not using data. And I think that transparency is going to differentiate brands, businesses from anyone else. And sort of that, third party data versus the data that you collect is going to be huge as we enter this new world of security, right? So I think mm-hmm. that AI has a huge potential for that data breach, for ethics breach, but it also gives us an opportunity as marketers and brands to, I know it sounds cheesy, but like to do the right thing, because we've seen all of the wrong things done already around social, et cetera. So I'm hoping that we learn from a lot of those things and can sort of look into the future of what this could be based on the things that we've done in the past. Right. So definitely, there's definitely two sides to that.
Well, I love that you brought up ethics, because we're seeing a lot of that in high school and levels of higher education in terms of copyright and plagiarism. In school papers,
totally.
So I'm I know a lot of universities have software in place to really catch that very quickly.
Totally, and I mean, it's going to come down to what does that mean for education in the future, right? If somebody can just regurgitate something back to you, what does it say about us? And I think it's a larger probably conversation. I'm not in that field, but it's a larger conversation about how we learn and how we process things, right? So.
Well, man, just have to go back to writing the essays in blue books.
Totally. I still write by hand, so I'm okay with that. Although my nieces and nephews, I don't think they've seen a pencil in their lives. So,
well, you know what? Just to advance this conversation a little bit more in terms of the content creator, there's also been as we're seeing proliferation of content development tools that make it incredibly simple. For anyone really to become a content creator, from platforms and apps like ChatGPT, Jasper, Grammarly, and Pseudowrite. I mean, that's just a couple of them. Mm-hmm. So it's never been easier to create, really. But at the end of the day, volume of content is not enough. And I think that probably leads to what we were talking about at the top of this. But a cohesive strategy needs to be in place. In your experience, what do you find to be the best way to develop and implement an integrated content strategy?
Well, no, so that's great. So right now it's easier than ever, right? I can create a video from my house. We can do a podcast. It's easier than ever. Integrated content strategy. So in my experience, Having one in place is really important. And I think defining what that is for your business, right? Because a lot of people, if you ask them, do you have a content strategy in place? They will absolutely say yes. And then you kind of look under the hood and it's a content calendar, right? Like it's just not enough. Like it's so much bigger than that. And it really needs to align with not only your business goals, but your overall marketing goals, right? So starting with your business goals, defining your target audience, going back to that contextualization, right? Like it's no longer this, you know, Jane 34 to 40, yada, yada, just kind of like very high level. Like we need to understand who our audience is, what they're consuming, where they're consuming it, and how they want to consume it, right?
Yeah,
again, that goes back to the textualization.
Exactly. It's more than just demos. It's psychographics and behavioral information.
Totally, totally. And all the other things that, you know, make them human, right? And things that, you know, what else are they reading? What are they talking about, right? Like implementing simple listening tools to just see what the conversation is outside. I think a lot of brands focus on their own channels, like what are people saying on our social, what are people saying in general, and what type of data can you pull to create better content for them, knowing that there's these questions that are being asked and these conversations happening. So I think really taking the audience first approach, everybody talks about it, but really saying what is best for my audience and how can I give it to them in the best and fastest way, because that is really important. And Google is looking at that. It's looking at if they're coming to your site and it's just too complicated to find something, that bounce rate is going to go up and your ranking is going to go down. So you need to give them what they want, when they want it, the fastest possible, and then develop that content plan, right? So first, what type of content do you want to create? What channels do you want to use to distribute it? What's the frequency? And then how are we measuring it? Right? Like measurement is so huge. I've seen so many dashboards. They're huge. It takes me hours to get through to them. So I think really identifying what's our goal, focusing on the channels that are working. Again, data, I think for me, doing a full audit, it sounds really tedious, but it's so important and it doesn't have to be tedious of what's been performing, what channels, why, and really looking at those channels that work and focusing, because you can't be everywhere. And those days of being everywhere and being sort of mediocre is not okay. Like people, if you're on a channel, people expect you to produce content. They expect you to respond in real time. It's, you know, this is a huge reflection on the brand. And I think I'll end it with this on content strategy is repurpose and refresh. You have years of content that's sitting there. How do you take that content and just do, whether it's just updating the stats or taking that blog and creating a video and embedding it, those things are really going to make a huge difference now, because it's going to help with your ranking. It's going to help with getting your team to think a little differently about content creation as well. So for me, repurposing is such a huge part of content strategy.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's a fairly easy lift for many organizations, and you know, a lot of people and companies have this mindset of well, we put it out there once, that's it. And to come back 3 months, 4 months, 6 months later and still, you know, tweak it a little bit, so it is somewhat new, but it's still, if it's still valid in terms of what it's trying to communicate, it should definitely be reused. So,
totally. And I'll add this to that, is that your audience may have seen it once. If you think about the reach on, for example, organic social, a very small percentage of your audience has seen it. So there's a very small chance that so they're going to see it again. A. B. If you think about it from an advertising standpoint, we say you need to have at least 2 to 3 touch points with ads for the message to resonate. We don't apply that to our organic content, right? Like, it's okay if they see the message again. It doesn't mean that you're being repetitive. Sometimes you need to rewrite it and make it fresh. But if you think about how we consume content, you know, it takes 3 to 5 pieces of content for somebody to even reach out to a salesperson. I think applying that sort of advertising and aligning that with your organic strategy is just a different way of thinking about content production and content consumption, I guess. So
yeah, and what you talked about earlier, making sure it's contextualized with a good idea, and how does that idea filter out into different, like a video or just a post, or is it a infographic or whatever it happens to be, or maybe it's all of those things in different ways to communicate that.
Totally. One blog could be 10 different, you know, multimedia experience, right? Like if you have one blog, you can create a video, you can create a audio, you can create an infographic, social posts. I mean, just from that one piece of content. So if you really focus on that one, you can get a month's worth of content from that, right? Yeah. If you actually slice and dice it, you know, vertical videos are great now, short snippet videos highlighting that blog, whatever it may be, there's just a lot of opportunity, right?
Yeah. I just want to come back to something you mentioned about what's in terms of creating content, what's good for our audience, or what our audience wants to hear. And I just think that was a really good point. I'm glad you said that too, because my reference point and experience is a lot of organizations still haven't gotten to that point, and they want to be able to control that message. And not that the companies or brands are going to, you know, just hand that over, but it is out there for everyone, and you've got to be thinking about your audience slash customers and consumers in that, with that mindset, rather than just being about what the company wants to.
Yeah, and that goes back to the audience first, right? And did I lose you there?
Nope.
There we go.
Yeah,
sorry about
that.
Going back to that, I think it's that audience first, right? Mm-hmm. Which becomes, how do we want to approach it? It's not we need to put out this press release. It's why do we need to put that out? And how does that serve our audience? Or we want to put out this type of content. Why and how does it serve them? I think it's just the audience first approach.
Mm-hmm. So that's potentially one pitfall. It's just the original kind of mindset of the organization or the social media team, and oriented it around the needs of audience rather than just the company or the brand. Are there any other potential pitfalls and challenges that brands should be mindful of at this point?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say, going back to the KPIs, I think lack of clear goals and the alignment between, and another one is, I think over-reliance on a channel, right? And also trying to be everywhere. So there's that balance, right? Like it's not just, if you're just measuring everything around your website or et cetera, there are so many extraneous, you know, from algorithm changes to everything else in between. So I think really the over-reliance on one and or being it in every single channel, I think is a huge pitfall. I think lack of alignment is. And I think also thinking about, we want to get this done, we need to look at our resources and budget and be realistic, right? Like you want to be aggressive, but you want to be realistic if you have, you know, building that team out and figuring out where the resources go. That's where I've seen the challenges be when it comes to really building out a solid content strategy.
Yeah. Agree as well there, because sometimes it might be all about just brand awareness. Mm-hmm. Other organizations or teams might need it to be more about lead generation, and you know, can it possibly be both at the same time, which I think it can be, but without having those conversations with a broader team like marketing and sales and brand and bringing everyone together to be able to have those conversations and dialogues about what's going to drive the action that everyone needs or is looking for. And the other component of that is sometimes each of those groups are incentivized differently.
That's a great point. And I think it's really, I'll go back to the data. I think it's really informing a lot of those decisions with data and setting up a content strategy that's gonna meet most of those goals, right? Like you're not going to get sales. It can't be an all sales channel. It can't be all brand. It can't be all of that. So what's the mix? What's worked in the past, and how can we really iterate on that? And the only way to know it is to do it, right? Like, yeah, you can look at industry benchmarks all day long. You can do all of that. I don't know how many times people are like, well, what are our clients, what are our prospects doing? Or sorry, what are our competitors doing? What's the benchmark for the industry? That stuff is great. I think it's secondary information. Like, you need to pull your own data and know what you're pulling and measure against that. And I think that's going to feed a lot of these different departments to say, hey, we're able to get your messages out, and here are the results, and here's what we're going to do. Like, you just need to show them what's working and what's not. And I find that once you do that, they'll be able to, they're very easy going after that point. But you just can't say no or yes based on a whim, right? Like, I think there needs to be that. I think that's where that strategy comes in, where, and you have to have buy-in from everyone. I think that's another thing, right? The lack of alignment / buy-in is really important. And that starts from the top.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, you started to touch on something that leads into our final question or topic here today. But when it comes to content development and deployment at scale, and that's kind of what we're talking about. So if we're expanding it to be inclusive of sales, marketing, and brand, and I don't know, customer service or what have you, that gets to an interesting point where it's not just a check the box, one and done sort of thing. So in that regard, what should leaders really consider as or to quote win in the long term, long tail content game?
Ooh. All right, long tail. lots of things that you've already touched on, I've touched on, right? Which is that high quality meets contextualization, for lack of a better word, right? I think knowing your audience, there's no reason why you shouldn't at this point with all of the technology and all of the data that we have. So knowing your audience is always going to be key. High quality content with contextualization is going to be key. Building the right content team is key, right? So writers, editors, designers, social media specialists, and more importantly, having them work together, because as you know, as consultants and agency owners, we typically have to go to multiple people to get answers, right? And that's an issue, because, you know, there has to be alignment, there has to be communication between. So I think really having the right team, even if they're sitting in different departments, really gathering that and creating that sense of team and communication. And I think having the right technology in place as well. So is it a CMS system? Is it an automation? Something that everybody can get on board with. Another thing I would say for long-term is listen to your team, right? Like, this is huge, because what I've seen is everybody will have an opinion, right? Like, everybody has an opinion about what a brand should be doing, et cetera, internally. Mm-hmm. You hired these folks. You hired the social media person for a reason. You hired the SEO person for a reason. Their opinion should matter the most, right? And I think that is missing from a lot of folks, where a lot of these decisions come from, quote unquote, the top. And then by the time they get to us worker bees, right, it's too late, right? Like, I think really having them have a seat at the table early on with planning is A, going to give you a better content strategy. B, it's going to save you a lot of time and money, because say you're building out these amazing videos, having a social person sitting there and doing the editing and working with the agency to do editing versus doing it at the end will sometimes save you tens of thousands, if not millions of dollars, right? So I think really involving your team and listening to them, is huge. And then the last thing I would say is the monitoring and measuring, right? Like, data, stay close to the data, make those decisions based on data. And then I would say some future looking things, user generated content, influencer marketing. Those things are sort of at the tipping point now, figuring out, A, does that make sense for your brand long term? And figuring out, like, going back to that content strategy, where does that, if you're a B2C brand, where does that user-generated content or UGC fit into your content strategy? How can you get your followers, your audience, to create content for you? Again, it alleviates some of that pressure off your team, and figuring out a solid plan around that. So I know that's a lot, but I'll sum it up into, you know, right team, high-quality content, data. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll say the last thing is evergreen content, really having that evergreen content that you can reuse over and over again in the future. So lots there, but I can go on, but I think I'll stop there.
But that's just the thing. I mean, I think we're really just kind of scratching the surface on this episode. And I think it would be, it would really be great to maybe to come back later and maybe we can zero in on one particular area. But you mentioned something that was great. I don't want to just gloss over it, but having a seat at the table, at the executive level or senior leadership team level, I think that really helps set expectations and helps garner a group understanding or leadership understanding of what it takes to achieve those sort of goals, and maybe just to get people out of such just the short-term mindset for things.
Totally. I love that. Yeah, that's a great way to say it. It tends to be a lot of times with us marketers, it's about the next campaign, it's about next week's schedule, right? And I think that, and also I'll add, it gives these folks and it gives us a sense of ownership that you don't get otherwise, right? Like the investment early on, when you're just getting content thrown at you left and right, it's hard to feel like there's ownership over anything. But when you're sitting there at the table early on, you're not doing anything but listening in, it gives that sense of ownership to your team where they can feel like they're a part of it, not just on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, as well. No, definitely. Hey, Ash, this has been, this, like I said earlier, it feels like we're scratching the surface on certain areas of content strategy and content creation. But this has been a great conversation. I would love to be able to have you come back and talk about it a little bit more, especially the thing you mentioned at the end, user-generated content, because that can also be a big challenge for organizations and companies, especially the bigger they get, maybe it's more challenging. I don't know, but I guess that's why it'd be great to have you back, and we could talk about that a little bit more.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This was really fun, Doug. I appreciate you having me.
No, I'm glad you'd be it. You could make it and be part of the conversation. And just as a reminder, again, if anyone has questions about any of the topics we've talked about today, feel free to hit me up at doug.l@whatsnext.com, WHATSNKST.com. Ash, great for you to make time for us today. Thank and it's you. Been a pleasure having you as a guest.
Same. Thank you so much, Doug.
All right, cool.